Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dan Novak and Gregory Stockel. Anna Mateo will bring us this week's words and their stories, and Dan Friedel will have this week's higher education report. But first, here is Dan Novak.
Greenland's glaciers continue to melt away because of rising global temperatures. But the melting ice might provide a way to lessen the impact of climate change. As the ice melts, it deposits tiny silt. Silt is very small sand, mud, or other material carried by running water. It's a kind of wonder material, said Minik Rosing. He is a native Greenlander and professor at the University of Copenhagen. Called glacial rock flour, the silt is crushed to tiny particles by the weight of the melting ice. 1 billion tons of the silt is deposited per year on Greenland, the world's largest island. Rosing and his team have found the nutrient-rich mud improves plant growth when used in farms. It also absorbs carbon dioxide from the air in the process. Researchers from the University of Ghana were able to increase corn production by 30% using glacial rock flour. The flour decreased the effect of rain and heat on poor farmland. The tiny size of the silt's particles is what allows plants more access to nutrients, including potassium, calcium, and silicon, compared to normal rocky farmland. We are at the stage in this project where we definitely know that it works, Rosing said. There are many barriers between this and a big-scale industry, but the potential is definitely there. The tiny size of the silt's particles also helps speed up a natural process in which rocks absorb carbon dioxide, or CO2. When the silt dissolves in rainwater and releases its nutrients, a chemical reaction occurs that absorbs carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. The silt is eventually deposited in the sea. The idea of putting tiny rock in farmland is not new, but the method has gained more interest because of the discovery that it can absorb CO2. That realization has been a catalyst for a lot more research in this area, said David Bierling. He is a professor at the University of Sheffield and head author of a study on crushed basalt, a tiny volcanic rock. The study found that spreading finely crushed basalt on fields, as well as helping crops to grow, removes CO2 from the atmosphere. And it does so at a cost about equal to other methods of carbon capture. Such detailed research has not been done for glacial rock flour, but tests by the scientists in Copenhagen found that 1 ton of glacial rock flour would accept between 250 and 300 kilograms of CO2 when applied to fields. That may also permit farmers to sell that as carbon credits. Greenland's new government hopes the silt can one day help the economy, as well as permit the country to move away from some kinds of mining. We don't need to blast off the top of a mountain or build a processing plant, Greenland's resources minister told possible investors in September. Government officials will present the mineral at a mining meeting in Vancouver early next year, but say commercial mining and use could be years away. The scientists at the University of Copenhagen and the University of Ghana say success could improve food security and economic inequality. Good farmland is not equally spread around the world. Studies show that the best farmland, which is across parts of North America and Europe, was covered by ice during the last ice age. Just as in Greenland today, the thick layer of ice has made the soil healthier. In Northern Europe, we think the reason we're better off than the rest of the world is that we are so much smarter than everyone else. In fact, we just have better soil, Rosing said. I'm Dan Novak.
When the coronavirus first appeared last year, health officials feared the pandemic would kill millions in Africa. Although it's unclear how many COVID-19 will kill, the horrible predicted events have not happened. Scientists note that getting true COVID-19 numbers is extremely difficult, especially in some African countries. They also warn that cases could easily increase again. Wafa El Sadr is the chair of international health at Columbia University in New York. She said there is something mysterious going on in Africa that scientists are questioning. Africa doesn't have the vaccines and resources to fight COVID-19 that they have in Europe and the US, but somehow they seem to be doing better, she said. Fewer than 6% of Africans are vaccinated. For months, the World Health Organization, or WHO, has described Africa as one of the least affected regions in the world in its weekly pandemic reports. Some researchers say the continent's younger population, more rural life, and the amount of time spent outdoors may have saved it from COVID-19-related deaths. Several studies are researching for other reasons, including genes or past infections with parasites. On November 19th, researchers in Uganda said they found a connection with COVID-19 patients and those who have had a history with the disease malaria. They said those patients were less likely to have severe COVID-19 or death compared to those with little history of the disease. Christian Happy is the director of the African Center of Excellence for Genomics of Infectious Diseases at Redeemer's University in Nigeria. He said officials are used to dealing with outbreaks even without vaccines. He credited the extensive organization of community health workers. It's not always about how much money you have or how sophisticated your hospitals are, he said. Devi Sridhar is the chair of international public health at the University of Edinburgh. She said African leaders have not gotten credit for acting quickly, noting Mali's decision to close its borders before COVID-19 even arrived. I think there's a different cultural approach in Africa, where these countries have approached COVID with a sense of humility because they've experienced things like Ebola, polio, and malaria, Sridhar said. Ebola and polio are also infectious diseases. In the past months, the coronavirus hit South Africa hard and is estimated to have killed more than 89,000 people there. It is by far the most deaths on the continent. African officials note the numbers could not be right, but they are not reporting the huge expected numbers of COVID-related deaths. WHO information shows deaths in Africa make up just 3% of the world total. In comparison, deaths in the Americas are 46% and Europe has 29%. In Nigeria, Africa's most populous country, the government has recorded nearly 3,000 deaths so far among its 200 million people. The U.S. records that many deaths every 2 or 3 days. The low numbers have Nigerians like Opemepo Are, a 23-year-old in Abuja, feeling better. They said there will be dead bodies on the streets and all that, but nothing like that happened, she said. Oyewale Tomori is a Nigerian virologist who sits on several WHO advisory groups. He believes that Africa might not need as many vaccines as the West. The disputed idea is being seriously discussed by African scientists. That doesn't mean, however, that vaccines are not needed in Africa. Salim Abdul Karim studies pandemics at South Africa's University of KwaZulu-Natal and advised South Africa's government on COVID-19. He said, "We need to be vaccinating all out to prepare for the next wave." He added, "Looking at what's happening in Europe, the likelihood of more cases spilling over here is very high." I'm Gregory Stockel.
From VOA Learning English. On today's program, we talk about expressions related to books. Books are simple. They are made up of two main parts. The cover is on the outside, and the pages are on the inside. You may have heard this saying, "You can't judge a book by its cover." That means you cannot judge a person by the way they look. While that idea may be good, people in the book industry may not agree. These days, much time, thought, creative energy, and money are spent on some book covers. And book cover reveals are big events for the writer, the artist or designer, and the publisher. But today we are not talking about the cover of the book. We are going to talk about its content, the pages. Our expression today is to take a page from someone else's book. This means to do the same thing that someone else has done. You do what they did. For example, let's say there is a young man who really wants to play on a college basketball team. But his skills are not as good as many of the others trying out. So he works hard day and night to get better. Even when he misses basket after basket, even when he is so tired he can barely walk, he never gives up. Finally, all his work pays off, and he makes the team. We could all take a page from his book and not give up either. Here is a great word that means almost the same thing. Emulate. If you emulate someone, you copy them. You imitate their good behavior or methods. Now, sometimes we use the expression take a page from someone's book as advice. We advise others to copy someone because they are good at something. For example, let's say you are taking a class with Tessa. She is a very good student. She studies hard, is organized, and prepares for every class well ahead of time. If you want to do well in the class, you might want to take a page from her book. You can also say borrow a page from someone's book. And sometimes we say tear a page from someone's book. The verb may change, take, borrow, tear, but the meaning stays the same. In my circle of friends, I am known for bringing my famous chocolate cake to parties. Now, Rebecca, a new friend in the group, secretly copies my recipe. Then she starts bringing chocolate cake, my chocolate cake, to parties too. I can say she tore a page right from my book. Not cool, Rebecca, not cool. Sometimes we use the expression as a warning. By simply adding not, you can warn someone not to behave like someone else. Listen to this example.
Do you have a minute? I need to talk about something.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I'm new, but I really want to do well at this job. Do you have any advice for me?
Sure. Show up on time, do good work, and be pleasant to work with.
I know all that stuff. I mean, anything else specific to this company?
Well, whatever you do, don't take a page from Julian's book.
Who's Julian?
Julian was vice president of the company.
Vice president? He seems like a good person to copy.
Well, last year he got caught stealing money from the company and is currently in jail.
Oh, right. In that case, I won't be taking a page from Julian's book, or anything else from him, for that matter.
Sometimes people say take a page from someone's playbook. This version of the expression comes from sports. A playbook contains the plays or specialized instructions for certain team sports. But if you are not a sports-minded person, you can simply say book. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Purdue University chemistry professor Django Mei is from China. He has been teaching students in the United States for over 10 years. Mei knows it is important to communicate effectively with his students in English. Sometimes he has trouble today. That, he said, is one reason why his old student, Aristide Gumusenge, will be an excellent professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT. Gumusenge, who grew up in Rwanda, will start his career at MIT in January. He is only 30 years old. Gumusenge is an assistant professor of materials science and engineering. He recently finished advanced research at Stanford University in California. If Gumusenge does a good job over the first 5 years, he will have a chance to be a permanent professor at MIT. In an interview with VOA, Gumusenge said he is looking forward to opening the Organic Materials for Smart Electronics Lab at MIT. He is currently looking at students for his research team. Growing up in Rwanda, Gumusenge understood the importance of education. His father was a teacher, after all. But he never thought about teaching. "Even after high school, I still thought I was going to medical school," Gumusenge told VOA. He arrived in the U.S. in the autumn of 2011 after receiving a scholarship to Wofford College in South Carolina. He was part of the Rwanda Presidential Scholars Program. Gumusenge said it was not until he started his advanced degree work at Purdue University in Indiana that he thought about a career as a university professor. He is planning to continue the work he did at Purdue and Stanford on engineering electronic devices. He said, "Some of the things people see in movies set in the future, where people are wearing smart suits and smart devices, are getting close to becoming real." He gave an example of a contact lens that can measure the amount of sugar in the body.
"We're trying to make electronics that can be more compatible with the body, both mechanically and chemically."
Gumusenge is working to create materials that can move electricity in the same way that metals in computer chips do now. He said the next thing is for engineers and chemists to work together so they can make products that work better with the body. But research is only part of his job. He needs to work with students. And that is where Mei said Gumyusenge is strongest. Aristide's training in English probably helps him, May said, adding, he handles the language much better than I do. May pointed out that Gumyusenge had to work as a teaching assistant during his time at Purdue, both giving lessons and helping students in the laboratory. It can cause a lot of worry for teachers who do not speak English well. Undergrad students demand much more, actually, than grad students, May said, noting that his own difficulty with English is not as much of an issue in his work with PhD students. Gumyusenge speaks English very well. How did he learn? Growing up in Rwanda after his country's civil war ended, one of his favorite things to do was to listen to English language broadcasts on the family's radio. Whenever he had the chance, he listened to the VOA Learning English programming. Gumyusenge said he arrived in the United States as a teenager, able to speak well and understand American English accents thanks to the programs. He said the slower speed of the Learning English broadcasts helped him learn quickly compared to news and music programs in English.
The actual learning program, the speed was adjusted so that people like myself can pick it up. You don't get that once you hit the ground here. Really thankful for the program, and I really appreciate all the work that you're doing.
In Rwanda, he was able to learn to read English, but it was hard to find people who could speak without an accent. The announcers for English language programming in Rwanda had an accent. So, VOA, he said, helped him learn American accents. Speaking English, he said, can help you get a job. In addition, Gumyusenge said, a lot of science videos are in English, so students can learn quite a bit on their own by following them. At Wofford, he found a way to talk with American students. One topic he learned so he could have a conversation? The Star Wars movies. He understood it would be important for him to learn how to speak confidently with Americans. At first, he just listened and tried to speak the same way as his schoolmates.
I guess I was lucky because I got here when I was 18 to 19. So I still had some flexibility, I guess, in the brain to allow myself to learn.
While Gumyusenge does not have a strong accent now, you should have met me in 2011, he said. What does he say to international students at American universities today? Do not hold on too tightly to your old life at home. Experience life in America while you have the chance. I know people who get here and change nothing about their daily routine, he said. They live as if they're still living in Kigali or Lagos. He continued.
Be open. Allow for people to approach you. Don't close doors too early, because America is such a diverse place. You're going to meet people from different backgrounds, and you never know who's going to have an impact on you.
I'm Dan Friedel.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.